Welcome back, everybody, to the Brexit podcast. Joining me today, I was going to say tonight, we are recording this evening, but hopefully you'll be listening at any time of the day, is a familiar voice, but we've not heard from him for a while. I was looking back, episode 43 to be precise. So he's a businessman, he's a sportsman, and he's also an author. And I do have a copy of his new book, Iron Mind Against All Odds, which is the story of Conor Devine's Iron Man performance. Beating back MS and all the trials you get with swim, bike and run. So, it's a great read. And welcome back to the show, Conor. Good to have you back.
Yes, good evening. I'm delighted to be back on episode 43. It seems quite a long time. A lot has happened in the last few months, really, yeah.
It's a huge amount. I was looking back through some of the episodes since we've last had it on. We've had a general election, of course. We've had Gina Miller on the show saying that she's going to take the government back to court over Article 50. We've had Ian Dunt saying that it's a massive mistake at the DUP of going in the coalition with the Tories. We've had Lembit Opik saying that actually he quite likes the DUP. So we've had both sides of it. We've had the repeal bill. We've had all sorts. But do you know what? We haven't heard that much from Northern Ireland, so that's why we got you back on. So what's going on?
Well, what's going on? It's July over here in Northern Ireland, and it's more a case of probably what's not going on, because there hasn't really been a lot happening over here politically in the last few months. To give that a little bit of context, we don't have a government over here at the moment. I suppose a very quick overview, we had a huge scandal which broke at the back end of last year, the renewable heat incentive scheme, which will cost the taxpayer over £500 million. And ultimately, the government in Northern Ireland is run by two of the major parties, Sinn Féin and the DUP, and those two parties fell out. And Martin McGuinness, who is no longer with it now, but he issued his resignation and resigned and ultimately basically pulled the government down initially over the RHI scandal. So since, I suppose, January of 2017, for the last 7 months, we've been sort of paddling our own canoes over here. We don't have a government. It's sort of been complete chaos. We've had a couple of elections, and really all that has done is that it has strengthened the hand of the two main parties, interestingly, and it has sidelined more or less the other parties, the other political parties in Northern Ireland. So I do say that not a lot has happened, but quite a bit has happened. But I mean, from people on the ground, I mean, I'm a businessman. I'm trying to create employment, trying to create growth, trying to be positive, trying to make life a bit better for me and everybody else. It's very, very, very frustrating to be living in Northern Ireland right now. Particularly because we don't have a local government in a time whereby we have probably one of the most disruptive situations happening, certainly in my lifetime, aka this whole Brexit situation.
We have deadlock instalment, don't we? James Brokenshire, the Secretary of State, is he having to dole out some of the funds to keep things going? I mean, he said that he wants this to be done at local government level, but is he the man who has to step in and do this? Is that right?
Yeah, well, sort of, you know, I suppose James Brokenshire has come in for a serious amount of criticism in Northern Ireland over the last couple of months. He's been, you know, very quiet. He comes out with these statements. He doesn't clarify matters. Even today, he came out with a comment and some commentary that has angered the DUP. Effectively, as we all know, the DUP agreed a confidence and supply agreement with the Tories where they would support the Queen's Speech, the budget and legislation relating to Brexit and national security. And for that, the government, or Theresa May, promised the DUP that they would forward £1 billion. Now, I know that caused an awful lot of anger and noise throughout the rest of the UK, but the DUP thought this was great. However, today, Brokenshire came out to say that, you know, that money sort of might only be available in Northern Ireland if you get the executive up and running. And that's not the interpretation that the DUP had. So we had Sammy Wilson come out today very strongly to say that the the Secretary of State is pussyfooting around his language, and he needs to come out and clarify it. And just a lot of very unhelpful language. And that deal in particular has caused, I know it caused outrage, probably is the right word, in some parts of the UK, but certainly it's caused a lot of unrest in Northern Ireland as well by a lot of the people and a lot of the stakeholders in the side of the IRC.
Well, I know the Scottish and Welsh governments have been challenging the DUP deal.
Well, absolutely. I mean, language like, you know, it's a bribe, it's a backhander, it's a price. You know, the bottom line with all of this, I'm not a politician. I'm simply someone who's trying to make things better over here by generating employment, creating a bit of economic growth. But perception is everything, particularly in politics. And, you know, for the Tories, they basically bought the DUP, they're going to give them £1 billion. And no matter what way that's framed, I think people are going to perceive that as in some way a payment that they're basically buying votes.
Buying their seats in Westminster. What, to your understanding, is that £1 billion for? Like, is that for the DUP, or is that for the new Assembly when you do finally sort of get the act together over there?
No, I think we've had a very rough breakdown. I'm not over the detail in total, but I know there's quite a bit of that money is to be used for infrastructure projects and investment in the Northern Ireland economy. I mean, standing looking at it, no matter what side of the political persuasion you come from here, I mean, Northern Ireland has been significantly, I know the Barnett Formula would suggest that we get the same as everyone else, but we haven't suffered the same as everyone else in the UK over the last 30 to 40 years. There's been significant underinvestment here. So a lot of that money that has been promised is for, you know, urgent infrastructure projects that have possibly been put on hold. I mean, one of the big criticisms and one of the huge major concerns a lot of people have over here is the European Union has been very good for Northern Ireland in terms of the funding projects and the amount of money, the hundreds of millions that has poured in here from pretty much European funds. And, you know, if Brexit happens, I do say if, because there has been some murmurings in the last couple of months, we mightn't even have Brexit. But if it does happen, people are asking for, are looking for answers around, you know, who is going to plug this funding gap. So back to your point, the £1 billion that allegedly has been, well, it has been promised, whether we see it or not, it's a different thing. I think it's earmarked for a lot of important infrastructure projects here in Northern Ireland.
And if Sinn Féin become the ruling party over there, does that mean that they are in charge of those infrastructure projects and they have a say? Or is that ring-fenced and away from that? I appreciate there's underinvestment and projects need to go ahead anyway.
No, well, it sort of depends. So the way this place works over here is we've had an executive up and running imperfectly probably for the last 10-plus years. But right now we don't have an executive. And really we're in a state of political paralysis, economic paralysis, bog standard period straight line paralysis in Northern Ireland, because the Secretary of State is sitting with a decision to make, you know, if Sinn Féin and the DUP can't sort out their current a number of things where they're disagreeing on, if they can't agree to go back into government, the DUP are saying they'll go into government tomorrow. The Sinn Féin are saying we can't do that until we see, you know, a change in attitude, approach, an Irish Language Act, and other commitments that maybe have been given in other agreements that haven't been implemented yet. So we have a political impasse. But the point being, if we can't get an executive up and running very, very quickly, it's very likely that we were going to see another period of direct rule whereby James Brokenshire steps in and pretty much Northern Ireland is ran from London again. And most people accept, including Mr. Brokenshire, that, you know, if we do have direct rule, that it's probably not the best way to run this place over here. We're sort of in no man's land at the moment, Tim, in that we don't have direct rule, we don't have a local executive. But today, the Secretary of State ordered through the reallocation of funds on the monitoring round, £131 million to go to health and education. So we're nearly, more or less, running on fumes, sort of from a direct rule position right now, but that just hasn't been formalised as yet.
And Brokenshire said he'll give it to the autumn, won't he? And then they might look to impose direct rule?
Yeah, he's been saying that. The problem that Brokenshire has is he's got no credibility over here now with anyone. He has been particularly weak, I do have to say that. And really, to qualify that, he has set a number of deadlines here over the last 6 months, and pretty much none of those deadlines have been hit. The challenge that he has now is with this DUP Tory marriage. A lot of people who are well qualified over here and are important over here from a political point of view are saying that, you know, he just simply cannot be an honest broker in terms of sharing the talks between Sinn Féin and the DUP. And one could argue very strongly that that's the case. I mean, a number of people have been arguing for an independent chair to come in, which has happened in the past in the United States. But so at the minute, we're just, as I say, and it's a state of paralysis over here, which is just amplifying and making things that little bit more nervous and unstable.
Mm. And that's because he comes from the Tory government. The Tory government have obviously paid the DUP for that money. So therefore, the argument is that he's biased in that situation.
Yeah, well, I mean, calling a spade, he's completely conflicted, the fellow. No matter how genuine or honest him and his party are, they're totally conflicted. In my view, I'm a business person. I deal with conflicts of interest all the time. I just don't see how you can manage that particular conflict. So I think they've kicked it for touch here. I think there's going to be they'll have another go at trying to get an executive up after the summer recess. And I would imagine that if they don't reach an agreement on the outstanding points, we probably will see a direct rule officially implemented maybe the last quarter of this year.
Do you see any sort of ray of light at the moment?
I have to be honest. It's difficult to be positive around, you know, the DUP have been galvanised by the most recent election. Arlene Foster was under significant personal pressure to resign and to move aside and step aside over the last 6 months due to her role and the ministerial position she had. Effectively, she was in charge of that department whenever the RHI scandal was executed. And she was under significant pressure. However, she and her party have been galvanised in the last 6 months. And the most recent election certainly gave them a significant mandate, which arguably was a response to the increasing in strength that Sinn Féin got in the March-April election. So it's very difficult. I mean, unless the DUP move on some of the key points that are causing issues like the Irish Language Act, and at the moment it doesn't look as if they're going to do that, then it does look that we will be entering into a period of direct rule, in my view.
Can you just explain briefly for the what is the Irish Language Act?
Well, basically the current position is, I'm not over the detail on this specific act, but basically, Sinn Féin and their supporters are, as part of the Good Friday Agreement, it was agreed, the Good Friday Agreement is a legal document, it's a contract, it was agreed that we would implement an Irish Language Act in Northern Ireland. And I think really, pretty much, it gives, you know, in law, Irish speakers, there's quite a significant amount of Irish speakers, Irish schools in Northern Ireland, people who live their lives speaking Irish, communicating in Irish, reading Irish, doing business in Irish in Northern Ireland. So I think, you know, the reason why that act was in the Good Friday Agreement was because there is similar legislation in Scotland and in Wales. But the DUP are basically saying that, you know, it wasn't them who agreed to that. And Sinn Féin are basically saying, well, it's in the Good Friday Agreement. So Sinn Féin's position is quite strong in that they are saying all we're looking for is outstanding points that have already been agreed to be implemented. But DUP, which is, they've been galvanised by their most recent supporters, saying, well, we didn't agree that, so I'm sorry, you know, it's not going to happen. So they've both basically hardened their positions in that, and it's very difficult right now at this point in time to, you know, see which one is going to blink first.
Yeah, and it sounds like when you were talking about the rounds of voting where the voters themselves either go more strongly to, and they have sort of abandoned the smaller parties, go more strongly for either the DUP or Sinn Féin, so the public's position is hardened either which way as well.
Yeah, I think so, because I mean, for me, this is nearly a sideshow over here, because ultimately it's going to be all about Brexit, and
which we need to get to. Yeah,
yeah, it's going to be all about Brexit. I mean, you know, no matter whether we have direct rule or whether we get an executive up and running, you know, depending on how the Brexit negotiations, if it happens and the Brexit deal pans out, and ultimately how it impacts on people on the island of Ireland, I personally believe that Brexit is a complete game changer in terms of our history here. And, you know, I talk as a businessman, and one of the major concerns that I have around Brexit is, if you look at what has happened in Northern Ireland, structurally the economy in Northern Ireland is not good. We still have over 70% of our workforce working in the public sector, and that's just not sustainable. The issue that we've had for years is that Westminster sends Northern Ireland PLC a cheque for 10 billion quid every single year. We don't send them any money to them. They send us 10 billion quid a year to keep the lights on. So from an economic standpoint, we need to stand on our own 2 feet, and we're not doing that. And the problem that Brexit, the potential issue down the road for Northern Ireland as a state, as it's presented currently, is in the last 6 months, off the back of the change and the Brexit vote, two of the major big local companies in Northern Ireland, which might be known to your listeners because they're international companies, hugely successful, Glendimplex and Almack Pharmaceuticals, are two huge companies which are owned and controlled by Northern Ireland's very wealthy entrepreneurs. And in the last 6 months, they have made an announcement that due to the uncertainty around Brexit, that they are now investing in new campuses and new facilities in the Republic of Ireland. And one of the suggestions that I would make is, and over the last few months, more smaller companies are talking into this in their boardrooms, and they're also making plans to move operations or any extension of operations in the Republic of Ireland. And my own personal view is that as these Brexit negotiations continue, I mean, we looked at the press conference today between Barnier and Davis. It wouldn't be a press conference to fill you full of confidence in any stretch of the imagination. They're only kicking this fight off. It's only round one. And the problem being that if there's any detrimental impact, if there's any hardening of the border here, I just can't see how there won't be. What impact is that going to have from an economic standpoint on people in Northern Ireland? And if more companies here follow the path of Almack and Glendimplex, I think we face significant economic challenges here. And I think what that will do then will ultimately push on this discussion around Sinn Féin are basically saying at the moment that we now need a border poll, we need to talk about a new Ireland. And if we continue, or this economic, we have an adverse impact in Northern Ireland around, from an economic standpoint, the calls for a border poll, a reunification discussion is only going to increase.
Yeah, which is a really huge call. I just pull you back for 1 second on the one point that you made, and you talked right at the start about the confidence and supply deal of a £1 billion into the DUP. But I think you put that in perspective then when you said that 10 billion every year comes across from Westminster. So that 1 billion is not going to go very far.
Absolutely not. We significantly underinvested here, but ultimately, you know, whenever it gets down to the brass tacks in Northern Ireland, this whole discussion and argument is going to come down to sovereignty. So, you know, sovereignty, it's people who want to be British and people who want to be Irish. And, you know, what I'm suggesting is I personally think there needs to be more discussion around, you know, running Northern Ireland PLC. I think we should have a discussion around the economic benefits of a United Ireland. It's totally, you know, it's not acceptable. You know, right now at the moment, it appears to me in the last couple of months that the Dublin government and the Belfast political people who are running Stormont aren't even talking. You know, Bertie Ahern came out last week, the former Taoiseach in Ireland, to say he's amazed that there's not regular discussion going on between Belfast and Dublin. And to be frank, so am I. I mean, one of the very interesting pieces of work that was done in this, I'm not sure if you are aware of this piece of work last year, it was the only major examination of an economic benefit of an all-island economy. And it was called the Modelling Irish Unification Report, done by a Canadian consultancy, KLC, and the University of British Columbia academics. The same group of people did a piece of work on reunification of Germany and Korea. And what they found was that with the United Ireland in an all-Ireland economy, the benefits to the island over an eight-year period would be to the tune of 35 billion euros. Okay, so, you know, I'm sitting here as a businessman, taking what, you know, the sovereign issue off the table. From an economic standpoint, I mean, it's totally illogical for anyone not to be having, and not to be prudent to be having these kinds of discussions. And that's something that just isn't happening in Northern Ireland at the moment. And I personally think that it would be prudent that those kinds of discussions and debates happen on a more regular basis, given the unknowns that we have ahead of us with Brexit.
And it sounds like, you know, when you were citing the example there of Dimplex and just the way that just things are going with the border itself, the lack of conversation between the North and South, that these reunification chats, the hand might be forced. They might be coming. It's something that people figured inconceivable just months ago, but it's actually all heading that way, regardless of the sovereignty angle.
Well, I take the view that Brexit is a force of nature, and I don't think, no matter what hat you wear in Northern Ireland, be it a sort of Austria or a Unionist hat or a United Ireland hat, Brexit, whatever happens with Brexit, is going to happen anyway. It's unstoppable. And what the Good Friday Agreement has down in black and white is that, you know, if the people of Northern Ireland will decide themselves whether to remain part of the United Kingdom or to form or to go back within a United Ireland, right? So that has already been agreed. And I suppose it would be fair to say that, you know, if we do have a hard Brexit, if we do have a border control, if our economy and the livelihoods of people in Northern Ireland are hit, well, of course, people are going to want to understand, well, if I'm part of United Ireland, will I be able to feed my children? Will my businesses do better? Like that's standard stuff. And what the Good Friday Agreement does is it will allow for that situation to occur.
Does the Good Friday Agreement, Conor, still hold even after Brexit?
Well, it absolutely does. I mean, it's a legal document which has been agreed between both the Irish and the British governments, and the people of Northern Ireland will decide, you know, whether they will remain. That's a straight line.
So the fact that Northern Ireland is no longer in Europe does not change anything. You know, that hard divide that's coming in with Brexit does not alter anything in the Good Friday Agreement to prevent reunification.
Well, I'm not completely clear on that, but what I will say is that I do know that there have already been discussions in Brussels that if Ireland, if Northern Ireland decided that it didn't want to be part of the United Kingdom, which the Good Friday Agreement allows for that to happen, then they would have immediate entry back into the EU. And so the business, you know, this kind of discussion is, as Brexit starts to take its course, I'm having more of these kinds of conversations with people. People are asking me about this, and I just think that it is fascinating, and it is going to be very, very interesting times.
So what would Nicola Sturgeon think of this?
A question.
You know, is this the breakup of the United Kingdom as we know it? I mean, surely it strengthens the Scottish hand for independence further.
Well, I think if you look at the last 5 years, I think there's plenty of people who would argue that the union has been weakened. But I mean, I think Nicola Sturgeon has her own challenges at the moment in terms of the SNP haven't been performing as good as maybe they had been in the last election. I know they lost some seats. So, and there's quite a debate. I mean, I know quite a number of Scottish people who are very for SNP and they're for the breakup of their own independence. But I mean, and I just think in Ireland it's a different discussion. I think it's totally unique here in that we straddle and that we border all the other issues that we have, but that we will straddle an EU country. And, you know, we just have no idea over here how that's actually going to work at the moment. So it's certainly going to be absolutely fascinating.
Is there any more clarity at all, now that we've been discussing it today, is there any more clarity at all on the border, the specific border issue itself?
There's been plenty of chat, plenty of tittle-tattle. There's been absolutely no clarity from anyone. There's been some suggestions put forward. Technology has come up now in the last few months whereby, you know, we can have some sort of technology arrangement whereby there's not going to be any sort of delays or pulling in of lorries, but we'll just do all this by technology and number plates. And Simon Coveney, the minister from the Republic of Ireland, came out in the last few days to say that, you know, technology is just not going to solve everything. So the answer to your question is no. I mean, we haven't seen anything plausible. There hasn't been any kind of, you know, the local radio stations are very interested in this now. But, I mean, there's been nothing of note to discuss. There's been no proposals put on the table. It's very much, let's see how we go here. Let's see what happens.
It is fascinating, Ty. It's amazing. This is the third time we've spoke to you on the Brexit podcast, and each time there's been huge leaps forward, and Brexit's not even really got going yet.
Well, I've tried to sort of stay away from politics this past couple of months because it's been hugely negative across the board. But I mean, whenever you see Barnier and Davis, I mean, what Barnier said today, more or less, was, you know, Boris Johnson came out with some inflammatory language last week around, you know, the monetary payment, the check that Britain's going to have to pay to get out of this. And I think he came up with, you know, you'll whistle for that. And I just think those things are hugely unhelpful. So what Europe seems to be saying to the United Kingdom is, well, we need to understand from an economic point of view, what are we talking about in terms of this divorce bill? But I mean, they've met now quite a number of times, and they don't appear to be anywhere close around this potential number on a cheque. So, I mean, I just think it's fascinating times. And then you have people like Tony Blair trying to sort of get this new referendum, trying to suggest that Brexit may not even happen. I have spoken to people in the media recently who I would say are well connected, have good contacts in politics, and one or two of them are suggesting that Brexit may not happen. So, I mean, it's just fascinating to see what is actually going to happen over the next 6 to 12 to 18 months with Brexit, but then what is going to be the outworkings of that in Ireland? You know, that's really where it's at. There's two things there. It's what's the deal for Brexit, and then, well, what's going to happen with Ireland?
So, you've no plans to escape anytime soon. You're pretty happy. It's home for you.
Unfortunately, I am locked here. I'm locked down here. We've got great plans to grow our own business. Although I've painted a fairly negative overview of where we are, and it is quite negative. But no, there's plenty of work to be done here. We're actually growing our own business. We're employing more people, and we're actually growing the business into the UK next month, August. So I'm excited about the work that I have to do here. I suppose I've just tried to switch off politically because, I mean, there's not a lot happening from a political sense here in terms of getting an executive up and running. And I would say that, you know, if Direct Rule does come here, then that definitely isn't a good thing for the Northern Ireland economy. I suppose the big unknown in all of this is, you know, how long is Theresa May going to be in power, given the, over the last couple of weeks, the sort of discontent in her own cabinet and the musings coming out of that. So, I mean, she's certainly not weak in strong ground. And if there is another general election in the UK in the next 6 months, I mean, a wise man might put some money on Mr. Corbyn getting in. And if Mr. Corbyn gets in, again, that's a game changer, certainly in terms of the potential impact of him and the Labour Party getting into government in the UK, what impact that will have in Irish politics.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly remains to be seen, because Corbyn is, you know, as many people who voted for him may not be aware, but he is no particular lover of the European Union.
He's certainly no particular lover of the European Union, but he has a very interesting take on Irish politics. And I think, you know, we could speculate and talk about this all night, but I think the interesting question is, yes, Brexit is a big deal, and that's going to be extremely challenging, but I don't actually know how. I've read in the last week the discontent that's currently in other parts of the UK right now, particularly around this Tory DUP deal. I mean, maybe you can tell me and update me, but my understanding is that there's huge swathes of people in Scotland and Wales and in England who just are not happy that Northern Ireland's getting £1 billion to keep Miss May in power.
Well, I think you're right, and certainly Scotland and Wales, there's been noises about it, saying, and effectively what we talked about at the start, that it's some of the bribes. And it's quite an easy thing to understand, isn't it? That you know, it's just so glaringly obvious that the Tories needed to have that coalition. They needed to get the DUP seats, and so they have, you know, for want of a better expression, they bought them off. And so if you can find £1 billion for the DUP in Northern Ireland, what's wrong with us out here in the regions, you know?
Yes. So no, it's fascinating times, and then it's, I suppose, as long as there's no more unknowns happens in the UK in the next 6 months, like tragedies or atrocities like Glenville or whatever, because I'm not so sure from a communication point of view and a human aspect, Mrs. May has got those skills. I think that has went against her, unfortunately, for the last 6 months. So the politics is certainly a very interesting space right now, and you know, who the hell knows what's going to happen in the next 6 to 12 months? I wouldn't like to put any money on anything.
No, especially, and you know, with the repeal bill, having to get through more and more legislation, which could prove more and more difficult, and then, yeah, as you suggested earlier, it's going to lead to another general election, and then we could very well see Jeremy Corbyn, who, you know, a huge swathe of his own party didn't even want to be the leader. So it's fascinating at the moment.
The Corbynator or the Naboth, you decide. What a choice.
What a choice, exactly. Well, there we go. Well, Connor, look, and just finally for you, how's things with you? I know you love your sport and your exercise and stuff. Are you keeping fit and healthy?
Yes, thankfully. I suppose I'm living with multiple sclerosis now, 11 years, and I suppose I've changed my whole lifestyle in that time frame, trying to work this thing out and run a business and be a dad at the same time. But thankfully, I changed my diet 15 months ago. I'm plant-based now, and I was able to go off conventional medication. And over the last 12 months, I've been able to neutralise my symptoms, and I'm feeling great at the moment. Loads of energy, buzzing, and I'm racing. I have a couple of events coming up in the next 4 or 5 weeks: an Ironman race and an ultra marathon. So, thankfully, on the health front, all's going well.
Excellent. And just in terms of your plant-based diet, particular foodstuffs that you swear by, what gave you the inspiration to switch completely?
Well, I suppose what I said at the outset is one of the worst things I think anyone can ever do is pontificate to people about what they should or should not be eating, because people are quite emotional and have strong views on food. But I think if you're to do anything in life, be it exercise or eat well or start a business, I think you need to do your research first. And once you actually work out the benefits of doing a particular thing, then you're more inclined to stick with the plan. So for me, my journey around nutrition was to read the China study the work of Dr. Colin Campbell, watch some documentaries on Netflix, Sports Over Knives, Food Choices documentary, What the Health. So really, Tim, trying to educate myself around food and understand food. And once I had that information, I was able to then design my own food plan, which basically is loads of fruit and vegetables. I don't eat meat or dairy. And thankfully, over the last 15 months, I mean, it has been paying huge dividends. So, you know, that's it. I just try and share information with people and let them make up their own mind. But it's a plan that's certainly working for me.
Yeah, and you seem to be full of energy, which I guess would be one thing that people might say, well, if you're only eating fruit and veggies, are you actually getting enough? Are you rebuilding your body enough? Do you know, or do you not get enough protein? I guess that would be the thing that people would say. But you sound like you're... you know, obviously you're doing all these events, you're a busy businessman, and you know, father of two children as well, so.
Yeah, well, whenever you say, people say, well, what do you actually eat? Well, you know, I eat lots of vegetables, lots of fruit. I snack on nuts and seeds and that kind of thing. And people say, well, what about your protein? Because for me, I didn't eat a lot of meat, but I used to eat a lot of chicken. But I only found out in the last 12 months that all protein comes from plants. And, you know, once I sort of, well, what? What do you mean? It's because I get my protein from turkey breast, but they get that through the grains and all the rest. But so once you actually start educating yourself that all protein does come from plant food, and you cut out the middleman, it sort of makes sense. So no, it's the immediate benefits for me was mental clarity, and full of energy. My MS symptoms have incredibly been neutralized. So, you know, I used to dream, Tim, of having normal days where I felt normal before I was diagnosed with MS. And over the last 15 months, I mean, I've had quite a few normal days where I was nearly symptom free. And, you know, I live a really busy life. So thankfully, so far, so good. Touch wood, it continues.
Great. And let's give you a little bit of a plug. Iron Mind is your book, and people can find it on, go to Amazon and find it?
Yeah, they can go on my website, connordevine.com, and they can go on Amazon and get the book. It's the second piece of work, second book that I've published in the last few years. I'm also writing an ebook at the moment, hope to give that away free and get that out there in October time. And I'm also updating my first book because the nutritional advice in that is a little bit weak. So I've learned a hell of a lot in the last 4 years since I published that first book. So I just wanted to add a bit more value and bring that up to date. So no, plenty going on outside of my business life and trying to be a good dad. I'm very, very empowered and passionate about sharing a positive health message, trying to get people to exercise a bit more and to eat a bit better. That's sort of my passion in life.
Great stuff. Long may it continue. Connor, thanks ever so much for joining us today.
Really appreciate you having me back on. Thanks very much.
That's all we've got for you today, folks. Let us know your thoughts on Twitter and Facebook and at the website brexitpodcast.com. And if you got the chance to leave us a review on iTunes, then we'd be forever grateful to you. The Brexit Podcast is brought to you by Tim Hemming, Jen Hahn and Warren Pohl. And the theme music is by Kevin MacLeod.